Okay, so we're live. Welcome back to the Magical Minds podcast. I'm Matt Bourke. How are we doing? How are you doing? I have a cracking interview for you today. I got the opportunity to interview a guy called Paddy McAvoy. Paddy McAvoy is a tour guide on My Streets Tours. Paddy has gone from being homeless to finding love. Absolutely fantastic. So got Paddy into the studio to do the interview. Met him a couple of weeks ago through his boss, Austin, from My Streets. Absolutely brilliant. I absolutely loved him from the time I met him. He's deadly. So we get to talk about Paddy's life. Paddy grew up drinking from an early age, childhood trauma, being homeless, then getting to work on My Streets Tours, where he does tours and talks about the likes of Brendan Behan, Patrick Kavanagh, Luke Kelly, which he loves. He done a beautiful live performance of a poem. I'll leave you in suspense. It just, the hairs of me neck stood up. It was absolutely cracking interview. He was lacking in love as a child, lacking in attachment, warmth, kindness. And now he's just doing full circle. He's just nothing but love in this guy. And he's just a powerful, powerful human being. Oh, I absolutely loved the interview. Myself and Andy had the crack with him before and after it. It was deadly. Hopefully you enjoy it. So look, as always, thanks to Noel Riley from Rooney Media Graphics, Andy from libertiesphotos.ie. Andy's working with us here in the podcast. Absolutely brilliant. If you need any photos done, you need websites, you know, you've got any communions, confirmations coming up, Andy's your man, always available for booking them. Get in contact with us or check out his website. Thanks to you guys for all your support. Like, subscribe on YouTube, check us out. We're on iTunes, Spotify, all the podcasts. Servers right across the way. Spread the word. If you have anybody that you'd like us to interview, get in touch, let us know. Absolutely love hearing from people, love hearing people's stories. We have a few brilliant interviews coming up, but we're always looking out for stories that have the power to inspire. That's our mantra, stories that have the power to inspire. So look, as always, mind your little self. Take care. Bye bye. Today I'm joined by Paddy McAvoy. Paddy, what's the crack?
How you doing, Matt? Thanks.
Absolutely fantastic. Guys, I've asked Paddy to come on the show today. Paddy is a tour guide with My Streets. He's going to tell us a little bit about what he does there, the lead up to it, his experience with homeless, and I've had a conversation before. I just know that this is going to be a belter of a conversation. I know it's going to be inspiration. So, no pressure, Paddy.
I thrive under pressure.
E-pressure, show you success.
That's it. Thunder.
He's got a more handsome beard than me, so already he's a fucking winner.
That's not a beard.
That's a fucking low blow. Not only am I ginger, I've a scaldy beard.
Well, the gingers are doing a minority now, apparently. So.
We're a race. Paddy, look, tell us a little bit about My Streets, the work that you do there.
Well, it was more training in My Streets, you know. I was homeless at the time, and I had fuck all to be doing, only trying to find something to do with myself. And at the time, you know, that's where I was. Like, I got introduced to Austin Campbell by Lord of Mercy, I don't know what's his name. I can't think of his name. But he brought me up, introduced him. I think of it now. He brought me up and he introduced me to Austin, and he explained what it was about, and it was giving homeless people the ability to get the fuck out of homelessness, to get away from it, you know?
Right.
And basically giving them the tools to do it themselves.
So basically
enabling them, you know?
And become a tour guide.
And become a tour guide. And there's a tour guide, and like, you're meeting a lot of people. And, you know, they help you craft your tour, whatever your tour is, whatever you want to be, to do.
Yeah, I've seen that on a website. You do Patrick Kavanagh, and there's other people.
That's the thing, it's whatever interests you. You know, like, I like Brendan Behan, Patrick Kavanagh, Luke Kelly, three of my heroes, and I could link them together on the tour, you know.
Brilliant.
For me, it was kind of, it worked. And they helped with that together. They brought in a researcher, lovely chap, can't think of his name again. But not only did he research for us, but he showed us how to research.
Ah, brilliant.
Google. I know, but he went into detail, you know, and how to you know, work your search and if that search doesn't work, how to redefine it so that it's even purer. You know, little things that it helps you. You know, it's not a lot if you know, but if you don't know, it can stop you from doing. You know,
oh, absolutely. It's one press of the key away from.
That's you know
yeah, Aladdin's cave.
Yeah, exactly.
Come here, take us back a bit. Where did you grow up? I know from speaking to you from Talla. Give us a little insight to that growing up for you.
Well, I grew up in the most picturesque place in the world, really. With that I've seen yet, Borna Breamin. Lovely place, I have to say. Growing up, I as a young lad, there wasn't much parental guidance. So you could explore, build tree houses, into rivers, fish, you know, we had horses, we had bikes, we'd flying around the place at large. Then I went into, you know, from playing with dinkies to actually driving real tractors. You know, I started driving when I was 7. I started drink driving when I was 12. You know, when I was 14, I had the bulk of a grown man. I was bringing in 1,000 bales a day. I was getting 25 pence a bale a day. I could do 1,000 a day. And I could do that for 2 weeks, 3 times during the summer.
Wow.
You know, maybe minus a week on the last month because it depends on the weather. But maybe some summers it was more. But savage money for a 14-year-old boy to be earning, you know.
Mm.
And I could get into nightclubs that were over 21 when I was 15. Do you know?
You probably still had that beard, didn't you?
No. Yeah, you think that, right, you know, but no, I only have the beard about 5.5 years.
It's fantastic.
It's Vikings tree.
Oh, we'll get on to that in a minute. So you're 15 years of age, you were drinking since you were 12, drink driving.
Mm.
Looking back, why do you think that was?
Well, it was where I was from and who I was with. And I just happened to be the only sober one, like... We'd probably go up to the mart and sell a few cows or something, and we'd stop off in the pub in the Blue Gardenia that was owned by the Wolf Tones at the time, and where subsequently I learned how to play the guitar. But we'd stop in there, and I'd probably drink, I was like 12, 2 pints of Spinnings, 2 of them, and a blackout, you know. Be on sleep on the bar, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But they carried me across, put me in the jeep, and throw a donkey jacket or something over me, leave me there, sleep it off, and then go back in and drink until 3 or 4 in the morning.
Would your dad, ma, be there?
No, it was just a neighbouring farmer.
Right.
And for me, brother, and the gang. It was a gang. It was just a local gang, but he used to congregate there.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
So 15, you were getting into nightclubs. Where did life take you then?
Well, we used to be up in like British and Pool of Fuca up in past Blessington and Talla the Embankment when it was, you know, Safari Nights and lakes and, you know.
Yeah.
And we kind of grew up in that sort of rain, you know.
Yeah.
But it was great old crack back then because you bait the head off each other and it was only a fight, you know. And then you'd meet the lad a couple of weeks later and then introduce him to his sister and have that respect for you because you were clean and tidy, you know what I mean?
Mm.
You might have bested him. She didn't go to town on him, or you know,
he
was just a clean old fucking two fucking balls banging heads, you know.
Times have changed now, haven't they?
Ah, it's going to fuck now, man. Just get all upset now, well.
Yeah.
Want to shoot you, man.
So where did life then take you? Where did homelessness come into your life? When did that begin? You know, well, the signs where you were drinking early.
Never, we drank, right, but we worked. There was a sort of an etiquette where you went to work on a Monday and you did your day's work, right, and you went straight through to Friday. right? And Saturday, if you had it, but you could do what you wanted with the rest of it, mm-hmm. you know? So it was Monday to Friday was, like, we didn't go out on Wednesday, you know? We did later in life, you know, when you realised what was happening. But, like, back then it was just work, you know, we were focused on work. Everyone worked. Every uncle, every brother, every sister, everyone had a job, had a trade. That was mm-hmm. their thing. So what they loved. Mm-hmm. And they did it, and they did it well, you know? And mm-hmm. that was kind of, it was a lovely structure to it, you know? Mm-hmm. And everyone had a lot of respect for everybody else mm-hmm. because you couldn't drive a machine like I could, but I couldn't cut a bit of meat or plaster or do whatever it was you do, you know? Mm-hmm. So everyone, balance,
mm-hmm.
you know? And like, if someone came in that was hungry, or even if they were a bollocks or they had a bad, like they were minded and they were brought in and they'd slag them back to health, you know?
Yeah.
It was just nicer back then. It's kind of fucking, I don't know what the fuck, everyone's confused and afraid.
So where was that turning point for you?
I went to Australia for a year.
You went to Australia?
I was in Australia for a year, yeah. It went great. It was 23 or 4 when I went. 23 or 4 when I come back. Or maybe 5. But when I come back, I brought back an Australian girl, Christy, God bless her, and then we kind of split up, and I was mending trailers, you know, doing the brakes and putting it, you know, and shim and fabrication, welding on, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And did that for a while, then I got a job out in Bray, working for Noble Waste. And that was going on really well out there. I was doing skips for them as well at night time, painting skips. A couple of young ones there working as well, putting on the stencils and the number, all that kind of crap. So it was cleaning up out there. That went on for a long time. And I don't know, I think we all had died. No, I went and bought my own machines.
Mm.
So working for builders for a couple of years. Didn't like the builders. Very hard to get money out of the builders. They were very anal and attentive when it came to getting a few pound out of them. Like, oh, you're relieving them, man, saying, you know, this.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, I was here till Friday. I was here till 9 on Friday and not a word of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because
some fucking dickhead broke a pipe or something. Mm. You know? But, pardon the language. But, I went from that into landscape gardening and designing. I did a garden up in Malachy Bright for a fella called Paul. Second name will come to me now in a minute. But anyway, he did a lovely site. I did a great job on it. 2 acre site. It was all there. I just had to move it around.
You know,
clean it and shake it and stand it up on its own or whatever. And I got 5 jobs from that job on that road.
Right.
And that got me going into landscape garden and that.
Brilliant.
So that went on for 4 years or so. I was doing real well. Lovely little house up in the mountain. I was just really happy with that. Then they all had died. Blew everything out of the water, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I say? Ignorance is bliss.
Absolutely. I was only talking about this yesterday to someone.
Well, it is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But the shock of a death can trigger a lot of childhood memories. Do you know? And when my father died, it didn't happen like overnight. It was bits of it. Just kept getting little bits of it as time went on, you know? Of what? All the putting, piecing everything together.
Like what?
What happened?
What do you mean by
like
that?
All the abuse. All the fucking, the abuse that my father got.
Yeah.
Like the abuse that I got.
Okay.
The abuse that happened. The blindness, the lies, the deceit, the deception, the what's that word I'm looking for? Manipulation that went on. That all came to me, you know, in stages. And it was like a landslide that just kept fucking coming. You know? That There was no let up. There was no let up for a long time. And, you know, whilst all this was happening, you know, all the bank accounts and all the things you had, the savings you had, it was all dwindling.
And obviously, were you hitting the bottle hard,
hitting the bottle hard, hitting the coke hard, smoking weed like a fucking train. That was my thing, you know. Not time, speed, bit of acid now and again. Yeah, I'd fucking few mushrooms.
Yeah.
But that was pretty much...
Self-medicating like a motherfucker.
Self-medicating like a motherfucker. It was like, to fucking... Because I'm looking back on it now, right? If I didn't self-medicate, I'd have killed a lot of people before I went. I think, you know, if I'm going to kill myself, why would I kill myself? Just to, you know, kill me. You know, if I ran this down, broke it down, you know, right fucking down to the skeleton of it. And like, if I'm just going to kill myself, I'm not going to take that fucker that abused me, you know, they're all gone. And I do something to get them close together so I can do them all in one go.
Yeah.
Do you know these thoughts that, you know, just mad shit that fucking runs through your head over the years that you might have for a long time. But my revenge now is be successful. That's my only revenge now. It's just fuck you and do well. You know, that's how I see it now. That's what I'm focusing on. I'm focusing on doing well.
How did you get over that trauma? The pain, the hurt. Did you go to mental health services? Did you contemplate suicide? Did you ever? Did you?
Regular.
How long did your depression and dark days go for?
It became very, very regular.
Which?
Suicidal thoughts.
Okay.
You know, yeah. I've been homeless for 3 years. It was all a kind of messy blur of. A few years, you know, looking back on it, it's just a mess.
Yeah,
it was just bad decisions.
Chaos.
Yeah.
When you say bad decision, what do you mean?
Well, bad decisions, letting the wrong people in, you know, like, you know, when your head is telling you to just a bad bastard, don't let this fella into the door, and you're all, come on in.
Yeah.
You know, instead of, like, telling him, there's no point you ever knocking on my door again, lad.
Yeah.
Because you know what it is. You know why he's there.
You
just let him in.
You just want the darkness.
It's like that.
It's like darkness meets darkness.
They're punishing yourself.
Yeah.
You're saying, right, come on, what have you got?
Yeah.
So now, yeah. And you're free falling.
Yeah.
You're letting go and rain.
All I was in similar positions. You know, I mixed with really dark people. I was in a dark place. I know how that feels. I'm a victim of abuse as well. So I know the darkness. I know the madness that you went through. Did you ever come to a point where you were going to take your life? Did you ever?
Close.
Yeah? Any reason you didn't? Any insights to that? Or
just... Well, I do. I have an insight. You know, because I've been looking at these insights all the way to stop myself, you know?
Mm.
What's going to... And the biggest one was, right... I'm only focusing on what's wrong. Focus on what's right. So I said, or is this wrong? Right, what's right? What's right? Think about it. Okay, what is this? What is this? And so you're a big cunt. You know how to move. You don't want to hurt anyone. You've got it all figured out that you just want to help people and bring positivity into people's lives instead of fucking chaos and fucking trauma. You know?
Mm.
You know what you say, man? A lot of people out there now won't smack their kids because they were smacked, you know? And things like that and the effect it can have. But it was smack at the right time, and you know this. And I know this. A smack at the right time. When you're a kid, can change everything in a good way. Mm. If it's a slap with love, you can't be doing that, buddy. That's not acceptable behavior. When you're a kid, you get it. And I fucking, I'm like, oh, you know, But you know what I mean? Like, you clear way into it then. And like, I'm not saying fucking, but you know, a shock, something, just to get you back into fucking on track. Because that track, like, my father, if I had any problems, I drink with that. My dad, like, he was a clever man. He was a lovely man. He was well liked. He worked for Esso on Alexander Road.
What was his name?
Paddy McAvoy as well.
Ah, deadly.
Yeah. But he worked on Alexander Road for 25 years in Esso. And he ran the yard, you know? And he's just a lovely man, you know? Really, I was very lucky. As lucky I was with fathers, I was as unlucky with mothers, you know?
How was your relationship with your mother?
Shocking. Really bad.
Why so? Do you mind talking about that?
Well, I want to talk about it. Yeah, no, I do. There's a bit of shyness coming over, but because it's not pretty. But we'll talk about it. Yeah, of course. You see, the way it was, like, I always ask myself, how would you tell this story, Pat? You know, how would you knock it out, like? And I suppose the best way I can describe it is, my ma and I had a house out in Raheny, before I was born. My brother and sister was born. My brother is 4 years older than me, and my sister is 5 years old. And they were born, they were living in Raheny before my grandfather bought a place and born in Raheny in the 60s. And they were up there for, like, my grandfather was a pig farmer. He used to live in Ardell Street. And they lived above the pigs. He was the youngest Jervy ever in Dublin. Jervy being a horse and cart, taxi. So. Anyways, he sold that, he must have got a bottle of money for it, and he bought the place up in Barnabrina. Place probably, I'd say 8 or 9, 10 acres maybe in total. And he had 3 children, my mother being one of them, and they all each got a plot. But my father would have built our house, and he would have helped my grandfather build all the sheds for the grandfather. Had 400 or 800 pigs, depending on what time of the year it was. But my father, he was kind of used and abused up there, you know. And in her trying to get rid of him, after he'd done all that, you know, he must have put up a little bit of a fight. I imagine he did. But yeah, my mother tried to hurt me to get back at him, you know. And I suppose she did. And it's been most of my issues come from that, you know. You know, my homelessness would have came from that. Me. But I would have still had the my main, my mother's, how could I say this? Like, she allowed it. She gave the go ahead. And that happened, you know? And I suppose my father was royally fucked over by her. And she went out her way to manipulate him looking like the bad man, you know. And she did well. She went to all his family, told him he was drinking, he was doing this, doing that, putting vodka on his car. No such fucking thing, like.
Right.
But she painted up a really bad picture so she could fuck him over even more, you know.
You hold a lot of vengeance towards that, not only the abuse to you, but to your dad as well.
Vengeance is for past that now.
Yeah.
mostly. You know, like, how a woman could do that to her son, to get her youngest son, to get to hurt the father, and complete her plan that she marked out from the start, like, so 5 or 6, when I got a glimpse of her plan.
Yeah.
I watched, I had a front row seat in watching her execute that plan.
Right.
Through my whole life, you know. And trying to, come to terms with that shit.
I can't get my mind around, to be honest with you, from 6 to whatever age you are. Have you found any peace in it? Have you put her to the fact that she was obviously...
No, well, I tell you what, I thought her my granny told me to get the Paddy. She says, don't come back here. Your mother's a bastard, she says. I bet the hell off your mother for years trying to put manners on her, and I couldn't. And her grandfather come home and spoil her and make me have to be the cunt. And nothing I did was ever good enough for your grandfather. Ever. Your mother's a bad bastard. She says, don't come back here anymore. Do yourself a favour and don't come up here. Because it's not going to do you any good.
Wow. That's heavy.
And that was when just the grandfather, I don't think he died, but he died shortly after. And she was 5 or 6 months behind him. She died of broken heart. She was mad. She was...
Your grandmother?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she was a good woman, you know.
Jesus. Wow.
She's one of the few of them that was fucking say was fucking outstanding.
Brilliant. Paddy, can you talk to us about your experience in homelessness, when you began into it, the very start of it, what was that experience like?
Well, the way it worked for me is I kind of eased into it.
Right.
Because I was staying with the girlfriends, or friends, and that went on for a while, and then I was seeing a girl up north, and I was working on the Game of Thrones, so between the two, it worked out amazingly for me. But, that kind of ended. So for the last year, it was completely homeless. You know, there was nowhere to go for that. And I got to sample hostel life for the homeless and what it is.
What was that experience like for me? Can you paint us a picture? Because it's fucking... It sounds brutal.
To say the least.
Yeah, give us an insight. Well,
every hostel is different, to be honest, you know.
Where were you?
I was in Cedar House. I was in Watergate. I was in... There's another one, 32 North Circle. There's a class of them around. There's two on Amy Street. They're everywhere, you know. But you get to see how they run. Some places are great. You go into some places, there'll be a breakfast there for you in the morning. There'll be a couple of bags. And there'll be a few sausages and bread and a toaster inside. You go into other places and you get fucked out at 8 in the morning. Or another place 9 in the morning. You go into Merchant's Quay, right? They're tapping on the shoulder like that. At 6 o'clock or 6:30.
Get out.
No, get up. Get ready, you know what I mean? And you're on a mat on the floor.
Wow.
Emergency key, you're shoulder to shoulder. No, it's fucking how much is it for a couple of army beds, you know, to get a man off the floor? You know? They're not bad, they're cheap. They're surplus slamming it down.
To me, you're a hardy, hardy book, you know, mind, body and soul. I get that from you. What was that like for you?
I was used to staying in a bed. And I had my memory foam mattress and my 100% cotton sheets.
You were you're actually just a prince. Down, you're just a princess with a beard, aren't you?
Well, I don't know. But I love my comforts, you know. Yeah. And being homeless, I fucking comfort's gone. Like it's shocking. Now, I say it takes 2 weeks to adjust to anything. Right? 2 weeks if you're giving up sugar, if you're giving up drink, it's fucking 2 weeks of bad. The first 2 weeks. Whatever you're doing, the shift. You're growing into, like I went into not having sugar, not having milk in my coffee, not having milk. Milk's gone now, you know. Now, God, I make up for it with cheese and butter. But, I managed to get used to sleeping rough. And that took a few weeks, you know.
Like, actually on the streets?
Yeah.
Tent or?
Well.
Or just the doorway?
There was no tents. There was, I'd go into, you know, flights of stairs.
Yeah.
If I could find somewhere in the flight of stairs that you could pass the seen security guard running after people, and I ran in and up the stairs and I went right up to the very top as high as I could go, and I laid my coat down,
yeah,
and my bag behind my head and went to sleep because it was dry and it was the highest point, so the heat rises. And it was that bit warmer, you know.
Yeah.
But there was times it was polytunnel in Bridgeford Street was handy as well. But then you wouldn't know what you'd fucking find in there, you know, when you'd go in.
What you mean?
But you wouldn't know who'd be in there. Like, it couldn't be fucking anyone. And by God, there was some characters in there.
Give us an insight to some of these characters.
Oh, no, I don't
even. No names, though.
No, I don't even talk about them.
Come on. Tell Joe love you. On the Joe.
I don't think it's fit for human consumption, some of the stuff that I've seen in there, yeah. It's fucking roughly. Do you know when you take alcoholism to a whole new level?
Right.
Like these are like the boys on the streets. Some of these lads got gaffs and just won't go into them because they're from the street.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. This is the crack of them. They'd be in there quite a lot, you know. And anyway, that's all gone now. At a minute, that's the way it is. Then I got a squat. I had a squat for a couple of weeks, and the squat was great. But when I broke into the squat, right, it was like something out of Indiana Jones. No one had been in this house for 10 or 12 years or more.
Aye.
And I had several. Runs I took in my shoulder and 18 and a half stone
hard as I could into it.
But I ended up taking the frame and all with me when I did open the door. And then I pushed it behind me and there was a ladder there and I put it on the door so it wouldn't open. It was dark when I got in, you know, walking around, right, and it was cobwebs. It was thick.
Where was your squat?
It was in Ballybock.
Ballybock.
By not far from Cusack.
Somewhere hell.
Yeah. But it was, you know, no, it was a scary, the toilet was out the back. The woman, like, whoever was in there, you know, it was a sad old life. And she was sad end, like, because the gaff was in bits. Like, and it was a really old house. Like, the toilet was outside. Like, wow. Couldn't find fucking it. Where the fuck is the toilet? You know? And, but you never really need to go. There's a panic. Especially when it's dark and you want to get the light of your phone. But, you could see all the medication and all the scripts she was on and what she was taking. Everything was left where it was. There were still some tins of salmon in date. You know? She had her, do you remember there was a war or something when they were thinking they were going to hit Sellafield and they gave us all these iodine tablets?
Really?
She had the iodine tablets in the
really?
Box.
That's gas.
Ancient thing, yeah. But I stayed there for 2 weeks and then I met fucking this magnificent, beautiful, amazing redhead.
Not me.
Well, now that you mention it. No, it wasn't you. But yeah, and we got on, fucking hit it off, and we're getting on great, and I'm not homeless anymore.
How long ago was that?
That was a week before Christmas.
Yeah.
Wow. Happy Christmas.
So many years were you on the streets in total?
Well,
between hostels and
between the 3 years of like being homeless.
3 years.
It would have been a year and a half in total. But the last, like that, the first year, the first 2 years of me being technically homeless, I would have been only homeless about 25% of the 2 years.
Mm.
But almost the complete year, you know, to its end. Wow. You know?
What were some of the learnings that you learned about yourself or in life being on the streets when you look back? Is there anything that you that stands out to you other than fucking pure hardship?
Well, what stood out the most was how much, and I was talking to people that work in certain charity organisations, I won't name any, and they told me about how much the government was paying for per head, per homeless person from the hostels. $170 per head, per night, every one of them.
Wow.
Even the no-shows. And then I got my calculator out, and my phone out on the calculator. I don't know. And it's like, on the basis of 11,000 people, that's 700 million euros of taxpayers' money being spent on the homelessness. And what some of the hostels are doing with that money and how they're treating the homeless people. And oh my fucking God. Like, I seen them, they did it with me, and I thought it was just me. It's because of me fucking beard or something. And they didn't hold back, like, one bit. Making up, you went out the fire exit door. And I said, yeah, what about? And they're not supposed to go out there. I said, why not? It's a fucking door. Well, you're not supposed to go out. And you got 3 warnings. And I said, but I only went out once, and I didn't get any warning. And he was just pulling rules out of his arse.
Mm.
And I got thrown out for the night, and they left my bed empty. And I seen him doing with other people then. And then I started to look. And then I got just studied what I was seeing. And that was Little Britain Street. I'm going to name it as Little Britain Street. The management in Little Britain Street, or whatever if you want to call that staff. Not them all, it's just one or two that might be human being, but the rest of them are just animals the way they're treated a bit. I was the only one in there that wasn't on gear or crack. You know, off my head. I've often strung out with a few pints of Guinness, but that'd be my fault, you know.
Mm.
But this, like, the way they're treating these guys when they're getting so much money. What's that? 170 euros by seven.
Mm.
Every week for these, and they're treating them like dirt. The food in a lot of places is beyond eating, and a lot of it will make you sick.
Jesus.
Especially a little bit.
And when did you?
I had the guards come in. They were drawing me out, and I was like, "I'm not going till you get the guards. I want to make a statement." And like, I rattled. They were kind of, they're getting a bit smarmy, but I went past the stage where I'd had enough, and the guards come in, and the guards spoke to me for about 45 minutes to an hour, and the guard shook my hand and said, sorry you're going through this path, and I'm sorry it's the way it is, and there's nothing we can do with you, but we can't draw you here, you know, so you do what you want. And they left me here. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, when I explained to them why and what, and it's not all of them, but like to I since done a talk, it's a mental health reform it was in the Hilton Hotel on the canal there, and it was about empathy, you know, and teaching empathy to carers and people. Like, I mean, this is from, you know, hospital administrators to people that work in hostels and anything in between,
mm-hmm.
you know. And there was a lot of people did a talk, and we all got up and did a little piece about it. But, you know, one thing I noticed, it all goes back to childhood trauma and lack of love and, you know, anything really.
Attachment.
Attachment. That's it, you know.
Hence why we attach to drink drugs and...
Well, that's the thing, that, like, this change, being homeless, there's another thing, right? Being homeless changed my, like, I used to think addicts were fucking the worst of the worst. Right? I did. And mm. there was no time for them at all. Until I went down into that. And I seen why they're all there. They give me some... give me some for the pain. The fuck. Make it stop. And you can't blame anybody for that. You can't. And that's the way it is. It's and all medication. Everything. From drink, alcohol, drugs. Like...
Anything to avoid a pain.
Anything to avoid gambling. A pain. Or anything to open sexual your mind. Abuse. Because it's all down to ignorance. It's all down to not understanding your soul. That connection. You're just listening to this ego in your head. This fucking shouting at you. The soul only whispers. And you can't hear it. And then, like, acid, ecstasy. Coyote.
Ayahuasca.
All that is mind opening. You make sure you have peace with yourself. Do you realise that we're not going to die? There's no one to get out alive. Can't take any of this shit with us. What are we worrying about? Clarity and understanding. And then it kind of brings you to a place where you realise that we're only here to help each other.
We're all just walking each other home.
That's it.
When did you bump into Austin? When did that
happened in 1999? Just still trying to get a chance down and home so well.
In 99?
Yeah, he used to run the garden in Bridgeford Street. Richard Halpin.
Yeah.
That's his name.
Austin ran the garden in
No, Richard Halpin did.
Right.
But Richard Halpin was the guy. He set up his own little tour team and he was doing okay. And the fucker went and died. Bless him. And but he was the one that introduced me to Austin Carver.
Austin.
Yeah.
And that's when you got into the tours. Tell us about the characters that you love, Brendan Bean, Patrick Kavanagh, Luke Kelly.
Before we get on tonight, can I tell you about the training on with Austin?
100%.
Austin, just before we go on tonight, yeah. Austin, the training was, he's a girl coming in for the creative writing class. And they're fantastic. You wake up in the morning, you write, Spencer, you know, you allocate time to, you know, a writer writes, blah, 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 and what to write, and if you can't think of anything, you know, just write this or that. Or but, you know, she'd come up with points of reference that you could dig into, you know.
Mm.
Like, so, if I ruled the world, I would. Or writing your eulogy, or writing it.
Brilliant.
I am from.
Yeah, whatever, and then go with there. It's like
I'm from tractors and dung heaps. I'm from hens and silage. I'm from fucking hides and fucking, you know, Coddle and Curly K and Tom and Jerry and fucking, you know. I'm from driving tractors. I'm from fucking horses flat out up the hill while their froth is building on their back, sweating and soaking up into your arse, you know, driving the fucking horse that hard, you know? And it's all, you know,
yeah.
That's, and you can get into that and elaborate that shit anyway you like.
Brilliant.
But it's just little things, writing, you know, if you want to write. And it's good for the mind as well, because it puts things into perspective for you in certain, you know, part of your life.
Creativity is a great way to express emotions. You take it out as grey matter and complexity. You put it on pages, and whatever come out is usually a reflection of what's going on. I find creativity and expression a fantastic way to.
It's meditation. It's healing.
Oh, it's very. That's why we're here. This to me is.
We're here to create. We're here to share. We're here to build. We're here to, come together.
Yeah.
We're here to plant trees in a way that we can build tree houses from one tree to the next. Mm. You know, we're here to fucking plan out, build a planet. The way I see it, we're here to take money out of all politics. And grow trees and veg on our own herb gardens and design it for in a way that it's free forevermore. The air provides enough air for everyone and forevermore. And we need to ensure a world for our children and their children and blah and the blah and that they're coming here free people. Because what's going on here is not free.
Absolutely.
It's in a fucking illusion of fucking freedom that's fucking far from it. And
can we talk about the street tours, as in Patrick Kavanagh and Brendan Bean? I'm blown away by your passion. Me and you talked about it down in the centre, the Robert Emerson, and I'm just blown away by your passion. Tell us about these guys and why you love them. What is it about them?
Well, Brendan Bean, the worst IRA activist in history, by his own accord and everyone else's, he's nothing more but an errand boy. I wouldn't trust him alone. He was a bit of a fuck up. And that's where he got the time in prison, you know? He was saying what he had from school. He was very astute, a scholar, you know? I think he was 11 or something, and he was getting stuff published in the school, you know, gazette kind of thing. His father, being the Republican that he was, his brother wrote the national anthem, for fuck's sake. He joined the IRA when he was 16. A very colourful life. His mother would have idolized him a bit, you know, and built him up. You know, he was a helpless bastard, like, with the drink, but a lovely, lovely, lovely helpless bastard that could write like a fucking Jedi warrior, you know.
That's a lovely quote.
He was a great man. They say he was a bisexual, right? But I've listened to several interviews with women that his wife, for one, and a few others that were with him, and they laughed when they heard they laughed hard. They say Brendan Bean was gay. Because Brendan Bean was the first, well, then again, he wouldn't know what to drink, but they say he wasn't gay at all. He was just tarnished that, you know. As well as being denied a place in Trinity College for the fact that he wasn't from a good family. You know, he was from the slums. He was a sewer rat, a street rat, you know. Kavanagh must have come from a first dark background in 1934. He arrived in Dublin and never left, but him and Brendan had a lot of history, you know. And I could link that on the tour, I was thinking. And then, like, Kavanagh was great, you know, like Raglan Road and that, and everything. Like, if you read some of Kavanagh's stuff, like, it was dark and deep, and you could see he was different, genius, really, in his own right. And like he was heavily used in the school, particular for us. Like he was a lot of his stuff was popping up. And then And they were all kind of activists, and they were all working for the Irish Times, and with Smiley Bertie, ran the Irish Times, and was my tour starts on McSticker Street in the Palace Bar. It was the plaques of the four boys outside on the ground, and I thought it was a good place to start. So it goes on to Luke Kelly, another legend, a mad, absolutely fanatic Luke Kelly fan. He would have tied Patch Kavanagh with Raglan Road, and there was a few other bits and bobs there that I could tie into on the tour. So it kind of starts off about my streets, Paddy McAvoy, Brendan Behan, the connection, and kind of that links Luke Kelly, and it ends up at Luke Kelly's statue. What I do, a loud and raspy version of "For What Died the Sons of Roisin."
Are you gonna give us it?
Do you want a version of it?
Give me as much as you got. Go for it.
"For What Died the Sons of Roisin? Was it fame? For what died the Sons of Roisin? Was it fame? For what flowed Ireland's blood and rivers that began when Brian chased the Dane? And it did not cease, and it has not ceased with the brave sons of 16. Will German, French, or Dutch inscribe the epitaph of Emmet? We have sold enough of Ireland to be but strangers in our own land. To whom do we owe our allegiance today? To whom do we owe our allegiance today? I'll tell you, to those brave men who fought and died so Roisin live again with pride. Her sons at home to work and sing, her youth to make her valleys ring. Or for the faceless men who for mark or dollar betray her to die as bitter. To whom do we owe our allegiance today? To whom do we owe our allegiance today? They say we have a language problem, so they say. How to write no trespass must hurt their hearts full sore. We got rid of one strange language. Now we're faced with many, many, many more. To whom do we owe our allegiance today?" That's how that goes.
Oh, congratulations. That was fantastic. Fucking Debbie. Oh, my hairs, my neck are standing up.
My balls tightened up a bit there. When I was like, I love doing that.
My neighbours are probably thinking, this fella is back on the oats again. That was fucking brilliant. I love it. I love it.
Oh, yeah, nice. What's the fucking stuff? Rise up, get the blood.